Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Yeah, you ever have those days where you're just playing catch up from the very start?
No.
And you just you can't find the rhythm? That's one of those days today.
For who, you or me?
You, but in trickle-down effect, it's now me. So you got impacted by that outage in Ontario and Quebec.
Yes,
and Eastern Canada, the internet.
I'm not going to mention the company because they don't deserve any publicity, whether it's good or bad. But the feeling of isolation when your computer doesn't connect, your phones don't connect, your cable TV doesn't connect. I mean, you are a little enslaved to our internet friends. It's an amazingly awful feeling when that happens. But we survived. We lasted another couple of hours and we survived.
2 hours. You were out maybe 2 hours. And
yeah, it's crazy.
And it's illuminating how much you rely on internet.
Well,
phone was down, everything was down.
So here's the fascination in my work area, my office. I have these lights that are connected to Alexa. So as I'm leaving to go to another location, I say, "Alexa, turn off the lights." And she says, "I can't, John. I'm not connected to the internet." And she does use my name. So,
Well, I think it'd be a little liberating if it's down for a couple of days. You would be able to settle in, but 2 hours, you're still scrambling. So I feel bad for you.
We survived. Life is good. We're good.
We have Marty Walsh, the executive director of the NHLPA, on today's program. I did the interview because you were frozen out. I didn't cut the cable just to exclude you.
I was starting to think that it was a conspiracy. you wanted your own time with Marty.
Well, because I don't really know him that well.
He's a good man. He really is a good man. He's got a great story, you know, when you consider that he's fought his own demons. He was the mayor of Boston, secretary of labor for Joe Biden, had cancer as a child and became a hockey fan because Bobby Orr came and met him in the hospital.
So he tells a great Bobby Orr story about not only as a kid, but then reconnecting with Bobby years
That's
later.
Good. Okay. All right. Well, what did you think of the hockey game last night?
Surprising.
You were, huh? We shouldn't be anymore.
It goes against logic that a team doing the quick turnaround should be fatigued or out of sorts, and the team that has time to prep should be ready to go, especially at home. And we're reminded again that being in a playoff rhythm is sometimes more advantageous than rest.
Yeah, rest over rust will always be a conversation at this time of year. And you do have to wonder, and we'll get into more detail about the Carolina game, but whether that affects what the Edmonton Oilers do tonight too, and how much they haven't played in a similar period of time, and they haven't played in a week. And now they're in Dallas to play game one. I just thought that Carolina tried to play a little bit of Florida hockey last night and got beaten at playing that type of game, don't you think?
They were trying to
challenge Bobrovsky. They were trying to be more physical. I'm just not sure that's in their DNA.
It reminded me a lot of 2023 when Florida tried to be the initiator against Vegas in the Stanley Cup final, and the Golden Knights just pushed back, and it was over quickly.
Yeah.
That's similar fair. Feel.
Yeah, that's fair. And the other thing now is that the Panthers are, you know, continuing to get contributions from everybody.
Everybody.
I mean, Mikkola playing as well as he is. Brad Marchand's role on this hockey club, even though he was thrown out of the game, can't be understated. And so that there's not near the focus on Matthew Tkachuk that way, he's the cornerstone of what they do. There's now so much depth on this hockey club. It's truly phenomenal. And I think we touched on it on Monday, but Seth Jones has become the Seth Jones that we thought was going to be one of the elite defensemen in the National Hockey League. He's tremendous.
If you can't stop Florida's power play, you're in big trouble because they're really good 5-on-5. If they got them both going, you're not, and
here's the thing. If you play to the edge against Florida, if you push back against Florida, and it happened last night. Officials sometimes don't see whole plays. They don't see the first cross check, but they do see the second one. Florida is sneaky. And I say that in the most of complimentary terms. Florida is sneaky at how they play the game. So that when, a player goes and gives you a little bit of a cross check, when you retaliate, Sebastian Aho, you're going to the penalty box. And to your point, a minute and 30 seconds later, the Panthers are scoring on the power play.
You know, my takeaway was Brad Marchand is standing there and the Carolina Hurricanes shoot pucks at him, like Shane Gostisbehere. That's when you know a guy has won. It's one battle, but... Yeah. Brad Marchand won.
Well, the challenge now for Carolina is how do you recover from this at home? They will be better in
reset.
Game two.
Yeah,
they will.
I'm
be
not
better
that worried.
No, but Florida appears to be on one of those rolls right now again. They really do.
Well, if anybody knows that the first two games don't mean a series, it's the Florida Panthers after what they just went through. But Gostisbehere reminded me of Daniel Alfredsson against Scott Niedermayer.
I actually heard that 2007, right? Yeah. I actually heard that described a couple of times on the radio this morning, that Gostisbehere did an Alfredsson.
Yeah. I think it was a little more subtle than Alfredsson's, but it was still really good.
It's still there. All right. Well, you better get to your new friend, Marty, here, huh?
I'm surprised that doesn't happen more often. The guys don't shoot the puck at each other more often. And that's one of those plays, John, where men's league meets the National Hockey League. There's not a lot of direct comparisons, but that happens all the time in men's league. In men's league, it happens all the time.
See, and the other thing is, I think that that's one of those ones where people who have played the game and know the game well, they see it right away. They yeah. say, he shot it right at him.
Olchek was on it.
Eddie got it right away. Yeah, and I'm sure that Craig Simpson did too. So,
all right, Marty's there. Just recorded this about an hour ago, and it's a great conversation. The CBA does come up. We have a little bit of guidance in where we're going, but also I think when you listen to Marty Walsh, you will hear and get a sense of a real positive place for the game. And what I mean by that is the relationship between the National Hockey League Players Association and the NHL. So we'll slide over to Marty, and he's got a message for you, John, at the very end. So I want you to stick around and pay attention, okay?
I always get in trouble with these guys. I always get in trouble.
There's a lesson to be learned here. Marty's coming up. It's 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon.
Welcome back to 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Now, here's Darren Millard and NHLPA Executive Director Marty Walsh.
What's your hockey background?
Just a fan. I grew up, in Boston as a little kid. My father was from Ireland. My mother's from Ireland. And when my father came out from Ireland, a lot of Irish guys and women, hockey became their sport. So I grew up in a house that the Bruins were on anytime the Bruins played, they were on. If they won, we were happy. If they lost, we cried as little kids. I played street hockey, things like that. When I was seven, I had cancer. I came down with Burkitt's lymphoma. So I missed a lot of opportunity as a kid to play sports, and because I couldn't really play 7 to 9, 7 to 10 because I was being treated for cancer. But at 7 years old, everyone knows the story. I met Bobby Orr in the hospital, Children's Hospital. He came to visit the floor I was on. So that was another awesome experience. But huge fan of the game. I mean, growing up, hockey was the sport that everyone in our neighborhood watched and played.
I know that story, but I've never been able to delve into it. What was the conversation with Bobby? Because you've crossed paths with Bobby.
It's amazing. I've seen Bobby since. So 7 years old, I'm in the hospital. There's Bobby Orr. He's on crutches, and he must have had his surgery at that point. It was right in November, December of 74, maybe January 75. I can't remember exactly what the time was, but I was in the hospital. And he signed the picture for me. I actually have it here in the office. And he gave it to me, fast forward years later, I get a chance to meet Bobby Orr, and I had a chance to explain to him the story, and he got teared up, and I just thanked him for what he did for me and the kids on that floor at that time. I told him I was kind of pissed at him because he brought a hockey stick for another kid. He didn't bring one for everybody. He laughed. He's a great guy. I mean, he's still the same guy today. And I talked to the players today. A lot of the players will go visit hospitals and stuff. Every team from that. And I thank them because, I think they understand, but they don't fully understand the impact they make on a little person's life when that little person is going through a struggle that whatever, it might not make it or just going through a lot of medicine and a lot of tests and a lot of pokes from needles and stuff like that. And seeing their hero walking through the doors is just something that these kids will never forget.
Health-wise, then, as a seven-year-old moving forward, were you good?
Yeah, I feel like I got good. I was cured, if you will, through treatment and prayers.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it really is. And when I had it, the survival rate was very low, like 30%. And today it's 90%, so medicine and science and, investments is just amazing. That's why, when we do Hockey Fights Cancer here and we teamed up with the V Foundation and the American Cancer Society and the Canadian Cancer Society, it's personal for me. It's really is personal because there's so many people that need to be, they're going to go through this and have this disease. And again, not everyone's story ends the way mine did. And it's unfortunate. But we have to continue to invest in the research for cancer.
What was your reaction when you were first approached about being involved with the NHLPA?
I was shocked. A friend of mine from Boston called me up and asked me if I'd be interested in having a conversation with a recruitment agency about the executive director of the National Hockey League Players Association. And I was labor secretary at the time. And I'm like, sure, yeah, no problem. Like, trying to play it off like it's cool. I'm like, holy God, this is crazy. You know, because I knew what the NHLPA was. I know what it is. I knew what it was then. It was the union for the players. And I knew some players from Boston, obviously. And I was kind of excited about it, but didn't really understand if it was real or not. So my first interview with the players after we're done, I thought to myself, this is very real. After the second interview, I felt pretty good about it. And then we had about three or four more interviews. And then obviously the players voted to advance my name onto the final. So it was pretty awesome.
You have to make a decision then, though, to leave a life in politics to become executive director. How daunting was that?
It was hard. I mean, you know, it was hard for me because President Biden is a friend and such a great person. And for me, it was just kind of challenging. I had to, like, let the president know that I was going to leave. And then obviously the labor movement, too. A lot of people in labor and business were excited that I was labor secretary because I kind of played it down the middle, if you will, and you know, worked with both sides. I'll work with all sides, if you want to say it that way. Yeah, but I had to go sit with the president, and he was unbelievable. Like, he was just happy for me and my family. And you know, he was great. He couldn't have been any more gracious about it. And, you know, I still talk to him now. He asked me how hockey's going. And, you know, he likes to joke about me with my thick Boston accent and stuff like that. And, you know, he was saying, you know, Marty Walsh is, you know, in hockey now, but he was great with it. And the administration was great with it. The vice president, you know, she jokingly wasn't too happy about it deep down, but, you know, it's an opportunity, and it brings me back to my labor roots. Kind of where I started my career, if you will, in the labor movement, you know, and it allows me to do business opportunities too for players and try and grow the game of hockey. You know, obviously support my players and represent my players as best I can, and also, you know, help them with their opportunity to grow in their own careers and their own professions moving forward.
You touched on working with all sides. Give me an idea of your approach, and is it organic or is it conscious?
A little bit of both. I think it's organic more, but a little bit of consciousness as well. I mean, when you see what's going on in the world of politics today, it's really, to me, I'm saying it's discouraging. The average person in America or Canada, quite honestly, are tired of the divisions of politics. And there's divisions driven probably because of the party system, the way that it works today. And rather than trying to collectively work together on issues, it's tearing each other apart. And I just don't like that. It just doesn't work. At the end of the day, you represent people. And, you know, when I was a mayor or a state representative or labor secretary, or even head of the PA, I represent people with all kinds of backgrounds, different religious backgrounds, cultural backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, political views, philosophies. And, you know, you don't have to agree with everyone and everything says, you don't even have to vote for everything everyone says, but you have to be willing to listen, have conversations, and try and get to yes, if you can. And I think that's missing in politics today. You know, my approach with Gary Bettman has been, you know, working with him to grow the game of hockey. And it's been successful to now. I mean, I know hockey has had a turbulent discussions in the past between the PA and the league, obviously lockouts and strikes and things like that. And it was a different time, and there was a lot at stake back then. But, you know, where we are today in 2024, 2025, we're going to try and grow the game of hockey and try and move the game forward. It doesn't help anyone. It doesn't help players. It doesn't help the fans if we're at each other's throat every day. Now, that doesn't mean if there's disagreements, we're going to have conversations about it. But I try to, you know, go down, try and find common ground, if you will, to move any organization forward in a positive manner.
We'll get to the current state of the negotiations, but when you took over, did you have to soothe both the other side and or forge a relationship there, along with the NHLPA sector, to be a little bit more open to things?
Well, I told them when I was being interviewed, I told the players, I told them my approach, but, you know, the players explained to me what they're looking for. And at the time when we first started, they were talking about international hockey. They were talking about growing the game. They were talking about different opportunities that they wanted to see the PA take advantage of on behalf of them. And, you know, I had met Gary Bettman a couple times when I was the mayor of Boston. And I had met him. We had done a park dedication. I met him at the Stanley Cup Finals. In 19. So I had I wouldn't say I had a strong relationship with him, but I knew who he was. He knew who I was, obviously. So, you know, coming into the job, it was, you know, a little bit of, I had some relationships with somebody with the Jacobs, the owner of the Bruins, knowing as from Mayor of Boston, I had a relationship with the Penguins, obviously, who also owned the Red Sox. And then I, you know, I had indirect relations with some of the other owners from Boston Ties, but you know, the players were very clear on the direction they wanted to go. And I told them, you know, I explained my path and the way I do things. And they clearly, I think, agreed with, you know, well, liked what I had to say, because they put me up and elected me as their next director. But, you know, it's, again, I've been 2.5 years in the job now, and about two years and a few months in the job now. And I said, I think we're still in the honeymoon stage with the league. I mean, we're still working well. But the players, you know, you think about what we've accomplished in the first couple of years. It's just been amazing. You know, the international hockey getting agreement for the Olympics and the World Cup and having the Four Nations, which was an amazing tournament. And the players, the passion the players brought to that tournament, which just showed you how much they're interested and want to play in international hockey, which is great.
The relationship between the PA and the league has been adversarial for so long. How do you describe it now?
I think it's good. I mean, there's always, you know, I think it's good. I mean, there's always going to be probably a little bit of questioning on the other side, what you do. I mean, that's human nature, right? If they make a decision, we might think, well, you know, I don't fully agree with that decision. The one thing I don't like doing is putting all our concerns out in the press. Like I don't negotiate through the press. I don't, you know, complain through the press. And I think that, you know, myself and Gary laid down some, not rules, but, you know, we both agree that if there's an issue, we're going to pick up the phone and talk to each other. And we really haven't had to do that. But I would say the relationship is good today. I mean, we'll see. You know, every day brings a different day. You just don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So I live my life a day at a time. So I focus on today.
I talked to Gary maybe a month ago and asked him about the tone of the negotiations, because they sound different. And he said something to the effect of, you think they're different? Like, sarcastic, but open very much to the positive nature of it. Have you felt that as well?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it. It's been a good conversation, a good dialogue. You know, there are things that we're still trying to push on, and there are things the league's trying to push on, and we'll get to understandings or resolutions or drop them as time moves on. You know, I've been in the league movement for over 30 years, actually probably almost 40 years. And when you think about, I've seen negotiations, and I've seen good negotiations and how it benefits the members of those unions. I've seen bad negotiations, how it harms and hurts the members of the unions and actually hurts the companies. You know, and I think that, you know, my approach is different. I mean, when I was labor secretary, I got involved in the railroad union strike. There was going to be a strike nationwide. I got involved in that. I got involved in the port negotiation. I got involved in some other negotiations on a national level when I was mayor of Boston. I got involved in negotiations with nurses and things like that. I actually negotiated across the table from unions as mayor of Boston. Now we were management. And so, you know, I always felt that an open, honest approach moving forward, laying the cards on the table and having good dialogue is important. And, you know, I can do it the other way, but the other way doesn't benefit the members that I represent and doesn't benefit the game of hockey. I just don't think that's the way to go. And I think, you know, even in talking to some people, you know, people said to me, you know, the owners want to walk out. The owners want to do this. The owners want to do that. And I just said, my response was that the owners walk out, they're crazy, because the game of hockey is in a very good place. And if they want to disrupt the momentum, then feel free and go ahead and do it. But I knew that wasn't the case. And I think that, you know, if I have to bang my hand on the table and do that, I can do that too. I mean, I've done that in the past, but I think that the approach that we're taking here is the best way for the people I represent, for the players I represent.
How knee deep in it are you right now?
Oh, we're pretty deep in it. I mean, you know, it's moving. It's interesting. There's a lot going on, right? We're in the middle of the Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, that we all have schedules and meetings that we have to do. So, you know, we're trying to figure out how we move forward. Our players are busy with the playoffs, and some of our players that aren't playing the playoffs now are taking a little time off. I mean, these players don't really rest much during the summer. They take a couple weeks off, and then a lot of them are back on the ice somewhere, and they're practicing and they're working out and they're staying in shape and they're doing their thing. So they never really get time to enjoy themselves. I mean, obviously they do, but it's not like, you know, I talked to some older players, you know, when the season ended, the next time they picked up a stick was in September. That's not the case today. These players are working out 12 months a year. They're working out all the time and they're constantly trying to improve their game. So, you know, so they're busy too. So, but hopefully we'll see soon. I mean, listen, it's, it's negotiations kind of take on a life of their own, and you can never put a deadline or a time on it. Well, you can, obviously, when the contract ends, that's a deadline. But as they go on, the best way to do it is just let it take its natural course of action in it. Some days you're in there, you leave there, you feel really good about it. Some days you leave there, you're like, okay, what's going on here today? But that's just, that's the nature of negotiations.
There was a soft target of the Stanley Cup final to be able to announce a new CBA or the framework of one. And I believe that came from the league. Are we somewhat on target there, or is that too optimistic?
Again, it's like you just don't know what would happen day to day. I mean, if you asked me 2 weeks ago, maybe. If you asked me the day after, I don't know if we're there. I mean, I just think that, you know, we're focused
on. Is that fluid?
Yeah, we're focused on getting a contract done. Yeah. I mean, that's what we're focused on, getting a contract done. So hopefully we'll see, you know, listen, if Gary Bettman's listening and you agree to everything I asked for, we have a deal.
Let's take a break. We'll come back with more with Marty Walsh next on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. We're in a good spot, though. Like, it doesn't appear that for hockey fans that there's any danger of any type of stoppage. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, yeah, I don't see that. I mean, I just don't see that. I mean, when you think about hockey, I mean, you think about the last couple of years in hockey, the playoffs, the seasons have been great. Playoffs have been great. Four Nations was just, I mean, people stopped me that saw me wearing a Four Nations shirt, or people I knew from around the country as Labor Secretary who aren't even hockey fans are watching it and saying, this is unbelievable. You know, we're going to be in the Olympics in February. So that's going to be exciting as well. NHL players. And then we have the World Cup of Hockey in 2028 that's going to come back. So we have international hockey on the docket every 2 years. We've had, you know, when you think about this year, the Stadium Series game, we had 92,000 fans seeing Columbus and Detroit play. That was amazing right after Four Nations. We had a great, you know, Winter Classic. We have great tournaments, great games, great players, great personalities. So, I mean, I think the momentum carries to the bargaining table. When you think of all those successes, it comes to the bargaining table as well, knowing that you don't want to disrupt the momentum of positive momentum. You know, especially like, you know, I mentioned earlier, I think we're off the air, but growing up in Boston as a kid, you know, we didn't have Stadium Series. We didn't have outdoor games. We didn't have that stuff. And, you know, just think about the young people today and the fans of today, what they get to experience, how the game of hockey's evolved. It's really an amazing, amazing product. And, you know, our athletes are world class, the best in the world who play hockey. So it's great to see it, successes for them as well. So to go back to the table, I mean, you know, I'm going to do everything I can to represent the players, and we're going to do everything we can, the PA, to represent the players that we need to represent the way we need to represent them. So that they're happy with when the contract's done, that they're happy. And the best result is always that both sides feel that they've won something. And I think that that's probably the goal here, that both sides feel they walk away saying, okay, this is a good negotiation and a good deal for the sport on their side, a good deal for our players on our side.
Was the Olympics the number one priority from the players that you talked to?
It really was. I mean, you know, when I was being interviewed for the job, you know, I had conversations with Connor McDavid and a few of the players, and they all brought up Olympics to me in international hockey. And so when I got the job, I came into the PA and, you know, I was looking around to see who was actually running international hockey. And there was, you know, three or four different people involved in international hockey, but per se, there wasn't really a leader in international hockey. And Rob Zepp was who works here at the PA, former NHL player, was involved as well. And I just saw something in Rob and I said, why don't you take it over? And, you know, within a matter of months, Rob had an agreement with the league and in tentative agreement with the league and the IIHF on both World Cup and Olympics. And I said, you know, we made the right decision there. And obviously the players are really happy about it as well.
You're a good delegator.
Well, you have to. I think a leader of an organization needs to be a good delegator and empower people around you. I did it when I was mayor. As Labor Secretary, and I think I learned it over time, but I think if you get the right people doing their job, you stay out of their way and let them do their job, and you help them when they need help.
LTIR, is that part of what you're talking about as well?
We'll see. I'll let you know in a few weeks, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch of issues. I mean, you know, there's a bunch of issues that we've talked about that have come across the table and gone off the table. So we're working through a lot of things. I think Bill Daly made a comment about something the other day on that. And
yeah.
Certainly that, you know, we're working through all those different proposals to see what the best way forward is on that.
Have you been to an Olympics?
No, I haven't. No, the closest I came to an Olympics was when I was mayor of Boston. Boston was the 2024 Olympic host city for the United States, go on the world stage. Unfortunately, that didn't end the way I wanted. And that was the closest I came to an Olympics. But I will be I'll be in Milan in February, I believe, with the help of God.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be just exciting beyond belief as a sports fan.
Oh, yeah.
And mayor of Boston, like, you know winning, you know sports.
Yeah, it's going to be a great, I mean, obviously I'm there for the hockey, but to see some of the other sports is going to be awesome to watch as well.
Do you still do any speaking?
As far as different organizations and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do once in a while. I don't do that much, but I do. I've been asked to be commencement speakers over the last couple of years, different colleges and different organizations will ask me to come and give a little perspective on life because they like my life story, starting as a construction worker and then, you know, being the head of the NHLPA now and everything in between, mayor and state rep and the labor secretary. So I do a little bit of talking here and there, but I don't have a lot of time for it. I get more requests than actually what I can do.
What do you tell young people?
I tell young people all the time to, you know, follow your dreams, and it might sound corny, I tell them at the time, but it really isn't. And don't be afraid to fail. Failure is not a failure. Failure is a bump in the road that makes you stronger down the road. And when you think about, I tell them when you put your life together and you look at all the challenges you've had as a person and some successes and not so much successes, that strengthens you as a human being. And as you think about moving back, those failures or those obstacles that you encountered make you stronger as a person, make you a better person moving forward.
But people look at you and go, oh, you're running the NHLPA, you're former mayor, you're labor secretary. Like, where did you fail?
I failed. I was an alcoholic. Back in 1995, April 23rd, 1995, it was a tough, bad week for me. And I, at that point I had in my life, I dropped out of college. I was working for the union. I wanted to be in politics and I was broken inside. And I ended up going to detox for alcoholism. And when I got out of detox, I went there to kind of get the heat off me. I wasn't there to necessarily start drinking, but while I was there, I learned about alcoholism and learned about the disease of alcohol. And thank God I got involved with AA and did all the things I was supposed to do. And my life completely turned around. And the things I have in my life today are in large part to recovery, being in recovery and the gifts that recovery has given me.
Marty, that's the most honest answer I've ever heard, that you were going to take the heat off yourself, not necessarily to solve the alcohol issue. And
I think a lot of people might have the same, they have the same story. I mean, anyone who watches this, who I just said, they're nodding right now because it's the reality of the situation. But thank God I did. I mean, I've had a blessed life. I mean, listen, I've had great jobs and great careers and it's all great, but at the end of the day, it's a day at a time for me. And I'm no different than anybody else. I mean, I might have a title, but that doesn't mean anything.
That's basically your adult life that you've lived with this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Every day, which is it's just having that perspective. But I often tell people if you can get to the idea of living your life a day at a time, it makes life so much easier because you're not worried about what's coming down the road. You just try and live in the day. Even somebody who's not an alcoholic or drug addict, you just try and live in the day and don't worry about what's coming tomorrow because tomorrow's a new day and who knows what it's going to take.
Do you have that challenge as well? Like living by the day, I know you adhere to it, but is that even hard for you?
Sometimes you do. Yeah, you look down the road and you say, okay, what are we going to do here? And you start thinking, but I honestly, over the years, I've learned not to sweat too much about it. Like, we have a board meeting coming up the end of June, and I don't have to obsess about the board meeting. When we get to the board meeting, we'll be ready for it. We prepare for it. Whatever's coming up, Stanley Cup finals, negotiations, whatever the issues are, you just try and deal with what's in the day.
How much are you meeting right now?
As far as
with the league?
It's consistent, but it's not like we don't have a schedule. Like, it's kind of like this week we're not meeting at all. I guess we're having a couple of meetings, but not official meetings. So, we had a couple last week. I'm not sure. We don't have anything scheduled now for the next couple of days here. So we'll figure something out as the next couple of days go on.
When you go to the Stanley Cup final, you can't cheer for anybody. How do you walk that line? Anybody.
Well, you gotta walk it. It's funny. When I first started the job, I would refer to the Bruins as we, and you know, Ron Hainsey is my number two guy. He's the assistant executive director. We're talking one night, and I said, "Who's we?" I'm sorry, I gotta stop doing that. You know, it's funny as I get to know the player, and I've met them all now a few times and a bunch of times, and I have like players and teams that I'm cheering for, and you know, I have teams I'm cheering for that, you know, I just know them. I know the players. So like you just don't cheer for them. And I'm actually enjoying the game better now. I'm like watching the hockey and saying, wow, that was a good game last night. That was a good game today. That was a great game. You know, it's like I'm into the game now. So I don't have a favorite team anymore. You know, I did grow up in Boston, but you know, I represent all 32 teams, all 750 plus players. And they're the people I represent. And so it's not fair to them if I start cheering for somebody.
I'd be remiss though if I didn't bring up Bruce Cassidy, who's a great dude, and
great
to work with him every day. Like you know him a little bit?
I know Bruce well. Yeah, Bruce is a great guy, and you know, great father, great family man. He lived in the town next to me when he was in Boston. He lived in Milton, and he still gives back to the community in Milton. You know, it's amazing what he still gives back there. When he won the Stanley Cup in Vegas, he brought the cup back to Milton. There was a young woman, young girl that babysat for him that died, and he just helps our foundation. And he's a good man, and he's a good father. I've seen him in action, and he's a good coach. He's a great coach. So I wish him all the luck. And you know, when I see him on the road, I'll talk to him. Maybe every now and then I'll shoot him a text or something. So you know, I do stay connected to the coach.
What do you do to relax?
Just chill out with my family. We have three grandbabies now, and I love them.
Oh, so you do?
Yeah, me and Laurie have three grandbabies, and they're the greatest in the world. And we just I could just hang with them all day long. The oldest is Max, and he's my buddy, and then he has Miles and Quinny are the brothers, two brothers, they're twins. So I just love hanging with them as much as I can.
This is fun. I don't get to talk to people that I don't know really well anymore because I'm old and I've been around a while. This has been great. Get to know you. Really appreciate it. And good luck in this stretch drive, both the season and the negotiations.
Well, thank you very much. This is great. I look forward to getting back on again.
And we'll make sure that John hears about his internet outage.
Yes.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Thanks, John. Thanks for not showing up today.
That's perfect. That was my favorite part right at the very end. And I wasn't sure he was going to do it. I was kind of hoping, but he dove right in. I didn't prompt him at all.
Oh, you prompt him all the time. Come on.
I didn't. I did not.
I was looking forward to talking to Marty.
Yeah, I know you were disappointed on that because this is how I knew you were disappointed. You were sending me topic suggestions.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, speaking of topics, just to change the topic completely, we talked briefly on Monday about the grand gesture that Tom Gilardi sent his jet for Mark Scheifele.
Yeah.
Okay. I talked to Tom this morning. Did not happen.
What?
Urban myth.
Really?
Urban myth. It's amazing how these stories.
Where does that
come
from?
The interweb? The one that broke for a couple of hours? Did not happen.
So Tom wanted to make sure that we cleared the air?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to just no.
You don't want to. Some people would just let.
Well, some people would. Like that's a positive
that's
story.
That's not us, though. That's not us.
No.
Hey, okay. A couple things.
Good. Thank you for clearing that up. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, we don't want the urban myth to continue.
No.
Quick thought about what's going to happen in Dallas tonight.
I think Dallas is going to win the game, and I think Dallas wins the series. And I think that
not tonight.
No, that would be a dominating performance if they were able to do that. And it's so close. In fact, all four teams going into the conference finals were basically 25% of the share of favorite status. Like, there's no overwhelming. team that that dominates our attention. So that said, I believe this is the Stars' time. It's third straight year to the conference final. Not just because of that, but the Mikko Rantanen impact, and Dallas hasn't got a lot of depth yet. Scoring production from their depth. It's time. And
I don't know how you say that. I mean,
well,
Sam Steele, you know, Wyatt Johnson and Jason Robertson haven't really erupted.
Thank you.
The way we expected.
Yeah.
You know,
it's been Mikko Rantanen and Mikko Rantanen.
Yeah.
Yeah, their second leading scorer is a defenseman in Thomas Harley, who has stepped up beautifully. So if Dallas starts getting J-Row going, let's see, that's a nickname, and Y Johnson going, then it's good.
Well, and you do have to wonder how close to 100 Miro Heiskanen is, because there's going to be an expectation that he's going to have to go toe-to-toe with Connor McDavid. Because we've seen that in the past with this hockey club, where he actually basically he shadows McDavid, and whether Pete DeBoer wants that to happen or not is an important part of how they monitor what the two big stars do in Edmonton. The one thing that I don't think people in Dallas understand at this point is that the depth of the Oilers, and you saw it firsthand, the depth of the Oilers is something that is relatively new, and they are playing like a team possessed as well that way. So it will be a fascinating series. I think it's a pick 'em. I really do. And if you told me that Dallas wins in 6 or 7 or Edmonton wins in 6 or 7, I would have a difficult time disagreeing.
Not one division winner got through to the Final Four.
This is a get-in-and-win league. You know that. We have seen it. And it really, what it is, Darren, is the difference in the style of play between the 82-game regular season and the war of attrition that is the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, and I don't think any of the four are surprises to get in to the Final Four,
but
none of the division winners got through.
Yeah. And some of it was because of young teams, like Washington being a team that is learning how to win again. And then there's a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs that should have learned to win by now and be in the conference final. By the way, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, there is a board meeting on Thursday in Toronto. And there's always been some discussions about who's going to be there, who's not going to be there, and what are the ramifications coming out of the meeting. The fascination for me is that Brendan Shanahan is actually going to be at the meeting.
At those meetings?
He is, but when you consider what is supposed to be happening, I don't think you bring somebody in and then tell them that they're not going to work anymore. So.
And this is regularly scheduled, previously scheduled.
This is the regular end of May budget approval situation for the MLSE board. But we also know that things are changing within ownership with the Maple Leafs because of Rogers buying out 37% of their other partner and having complete control of the organization.
We thought that there would be changes there.
Yes.
There still will be, but maybe not to the extent that we
Know. I think a lot of people expected if there was change to be made, it would already have occurred because, as you know, Darren, this fan base wants blood for, you know, the loyalty of the last 8 or 9 years and not being able to get past the second round more than twice.
8 or 9 years? 8 or 9 years
with this group.
You can't blame
Brendan Shanahan and Brad Treliving for 1978.
No, I wasn't blaming.
Or 1986 or 1997.
I wasn't blaming Brad Treliving for anything because he's still too new as a manager. I think that takes a little. This is his fingerprints got to be on it all over it right now. But
yeah. Going to be
all right. Monitor 100% hockey on all your social media channels. Stay up to date. We'll have the very latest, providing that the internet allows us that avenue.
Do you think the internet is here to stay?
Well, it wasn't for a while for you. So it's
okay.
Don't get too comfortable over there. It's good to have you back, though, buddy. I missed you.
I was starting to bite my nails.
Yeah. And I didn't wait very long before I went into the interview. I was like, this is my chance to be a star.
Oh. Sure. Now the conspiracy theories will start.
There you go. Be good, buddy.
See you Friday.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.